WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keys. There is hope yet for TikTok users who have been terrified over a ban on the popular video app that was set to take effect tomorrow. President-elect Donald Trump tells NBC that he will likely give TikTok a 90-day extension. CBS's Kelly O'Reilly explains.
Under the law, TikTok should not be available in any U.S. app stores starting on Sunday, though users will not be penalized for continuing to post if they still have access.
We're just hoping that even if TikTok does get banned, we're still able to really pour into some other platforms and maintain what we've built so far.
Thousands marched in the nation's capital ahead of Trump's second inauguration set for Monday to protest policies they say will affect climate change, people of color, and women's rights.
There's just so much at stake right now. I feel like everything's coming to a tipping point, and it's scary. We're all scared of what this administration will do.
Those inauguration ceremonies are being moved inside to the Capitol over forecast of freezing temperatures in D.C. and some two-thirds of the nation. CBS meteorologist John Elliott.
First off, precipitation an issue. We've got storms in parts of the south. Problem is we're seeing some mixing with elevation through the Shenandoah Valley. And then we're going to see the possibility of very heavy snow for the northeast tomorrow.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams says the Big Apple is ready.
Cold temperatures, high winds tomorrow could be dangerous, and we're doing everything possible to protect New Yorkers.
The Trump administration is planning to start promised mass deportations the day after he's sworn in.
Reports have been circulating that Donald Trump retaking the presidential office on Tuesday will begin large-scale deportations, with Chicago perceived as an early target. As it's not yet clear how, when, or where possible raids may take place, a coalition of immigrant advocates are now in a massive push to educate Chicago's undocumented community with critical information concerning their rights, how to prepare for an emergency, and how to navigate potential legal interactions.
So we're going to do this bilingual, English and Spanish. So buenos dias.
Brandon Eisen for CBS News, Chicago.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has concerns over that Gaza ceasefire deal. Reporter Linda Gradstein.
Hamas has not yet given the list of names of those who will be freed: women, children, the elderly, and those who are ill. Netanyahu also said that the six-week deal was a temporary ceasefire and that U.S. President-elect Donald Trump agrees that Israel can return to fighting if Hamas reneges on the deal.
People in Gaza are awaiting much-needed food and medical aid. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Wisconsin has just added more than 30,000 acres to its protected agricultural lands, preserving the state's farming heritage and supporting conservation farming practices. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
Agricultural Enterprise Areas, or AEAs, are community-driven initiatives aimed at protecting farmland and boosting the local economy. Wednesday Coy with the state's Department of Agricultural, Trade, and Consumer Protection.
It's cool because we get to see what landowners identify as areas that are important to their local agricultural community, both economically and historically.
AEA landowners also contribute to conservation practices across the state by voluntarily signing agreements to use their land for agricultural purposes for a set time period and implement environmentally friendly farming methods. In return, they may be eligible for farm tax credits. Coy says the new Delavan Lake Watershed AEA serves to protect land near large lake attractions like Lake Geneva.
There are a lot of interests there in developing the area, but then there's also a lot of interest from their agricultural producers to protect the farmland that's there.
By designating these new AEAs, she says landowners and community members are taking proactive steps towards preventing development that could convert these lands to non-agricultural use. The latest areas across Sauk and Walworth counties add to the state's nearly 2 million acres of AEAs. Wisconsin now has 51 agricultural enterprise areas that span 140 towns and the Bad River Reservation. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A mix of sun and clouds and a high in the mid-20s today, wind chills down to zero. Partly cloudy tonight, a low near 2, wind chill to 10 degrees below. Mostly sunny and near 5 Sunday, wind chill to 15 below. Right now it's 22.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome one of Wisconsin's very own, comedian Tom Clark. Then Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller and I discuss award season. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Oh, yeah. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Oh man, talking all kinds of stuff too, just a lot going on, a lot in the world. But welcome everybody to Busted Pencils, and there's my friend Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Johnny, how are you, my buddy?
Doing great, Tim. It's always great to connect with you and, you know, do this show, and we always get to have such great conversations. Sometimes lately about stuff that all of us wish weren't going the way it was, but amidst all of that, I'll just call it that, you know, we'll leave it at that. Amidst all of that, there's some really great reminders and really great efforts and renewed energies around, you know, teaching for social justice, organizing in higher education to better represent diversity. And when I mean that, to just be a stronger democracy, despite some of the turns it's taking in this historical moment. So Tim, it's great to be with you. It's great to be with Jess, and it's extra special. I'll let you introduce our guest, but we have a returner. We have a returner, especially this guy, because you know, he is a source of renewed energy all the time.
Yeah, he is.
And so we got him. We're lucky to have him here with us today, Tim. So we give him an introduction.
Yeah, we got him. We got that guy back. Dr. Kevin Kumashiro, founder, one of the main founders of Education Deans for Justice and Equity, leading higher education in lots of directions. And man, we are in need of a leader right now. Dr. Kumashiro, welcome back to Busted Pencils.
What a treat to be back on Busted Pencils with two of my favorite, now three of my favorite people, Tim, Johnny, and Jess. But your listeners need to know I listen to your show 4 days a week, and I hope that they are doing so as well. Keep up the amazing work, and thanks so much for having me today.
Nah, we love it, especially, hey, check it out, 608-557-8577. That's the Busted Pencils mailbag. You know, put that out there right away if you want to drop us a note. We would appreciate it, you know. Love compliments, and also, you know, love suggestions. Hey, and even if you're a critic, 608-557-8577, we'll take that. Kevin, so much going on, okay? We are now, what, in week 3 of President-elect Trump. Lots happening. We're going to get to the main bulk of the show, but Jess, do we have that ready to go for that special surprise I wanted to give Kevin before we get the show started?
Unfortunately, it's not quite ready. I'm going to need you to be patient with me.
Okay, I'm going to let you be ready. But so, yeah, Kevin, okay, your surprise, you're going to have to wait. We got to get it wrapped the right way. We got to put a bow on it. We got to make sure that the confetti is ready to fall out of the ceiling when we present it to you. But so, Kevin, yeah, here it is, you know, 3 weeks, President-elect Trump. We have done the analysis back and forth. What happened? I don't know. I mean, whatever happened, it doesn't matter at this point, does it, Kevin? Or does it? We're coming into this. How do we figure this out? I mean, where, from your point of view, do you see how we in education, higher education, leaders particularly, what do we do? What are we doing with this? And as you like to say, what are we doing with this moment?
Yeah, I'm appreciating the question. And I do feel like, you know, in addition to trying to understand how we got here, it's incredibly important that we understand what's about to come. And I think, you know, whereas a lot of people think that this is a moment that centers around Trump returning to office, what I like to remind myself is that whether or not Trump was reelected, there was in very like clear 900 plus pages in detail a plan for what some organizations and leaders wanted to see happen to our society and in particular to education. Project 2025 laid out this incredibly detailed plan, and I think we're about to see it, a lot of it, come to fruition. I think it's going to define a lot of the goals. But that's how I try to understand this moment, is that it's a moment when, you know, decades of organizing on the increasingly far right has really culminated into this opportunity to kind of seize multiple branches of the federal government, to seize many state governments, to kind of see alignment between legislation, between litigation, between state policy, between local policies. And there is a blueprint for how we try to bring, how they try to bring all of this together. And so when I think about what's needed right now among leaders, I think it's really understanding, well, what is the blueprint? What is the game plan for Trump and supporters and the much, much larger movement that surrounds and enables Trump? What is the plan for society in general and education in particular? And then how do we try to dive in? And just as one final thought about this, I think naming the moment is not just about looking at priorities from those in positions of power. I think it's also about trying to understand the narratives that are out there that make those priorities more likely to happen. Narratives, for example, that get even sometimes those who think they're in opposition, whether it's the Democrats or the progressives or the grassroots organizers or the unions, sometimes these other groups are buying into the wrong stories of what the problems are and then are more likely to, you know, buy into the wrong solutions as well. So naming the moment, it's really an incredible task that we have, but I think that's what is called upon us in this moment.
So you've named it in that way, or at least started giving us some direction at this. I was thinking, though, too, we come at this because, you know, obviously most listeners to Busted Pencils and us, the three and four of us actually here, you know, have our concerns. But the other part of this moment, Kevin, is to realize that, you know, 50% of our neighbors saw this as something they wanted. They chose it. And so when you're talking about naming that moment, I wonder, too, if we also have to be conscious of saying that there's a lot of our neighbors, they're naming this moment in a totally different way. And maybe how we, particularly as educators, and we're really, you know, we talk about education, we know that's what we're doing, whether it's K-12 public, higher education, being that foundation of democracy. Well, in those institutions, though, there are 50% of our neighbors who are looking forward to what's about to happen. I was wondering if you had a little bit of just kind of thought. I know I'm hitting you right off the, you know, a little bit out of left field on that one, but it occurred to me when you're thinking about that, Kevin, it's just like, we know where we're at, but there are a lot of people, you know, this who said, we want to go here. We want to go where we're going. And I'm thinking about, how do we talk to those neighbors, those friends, those family members who are part of that 50%?
Yeah, I'm really appreciating your question. I feel like you know, sometimes I'm thinking about right after the election, a very good friend of mine who I respect enormously had so much despair about this, not just the state of affairs in this country, but the state of education. And is education succeeding at teaching critical thinking and questioning? And so, you know, part of how one of the ways that I try to make sense of the election, and particularly the election of the president, is to refuse like one or two explanations. You know, I think there's many things that happened here, and some of it isn't getting into the media enough. I think it is true that in some ways there's this, what some are calling a rightward swing. I think, you know, we're seeing that sort of in the numbers. But I also think, you know, where are people getting their information? So what is the role of right-wing media, and how is that shaping the ways that an increasing number of people are trying to themselves name the moment, and where are they being misled? Where is there misinformation, but also disinformation in this moment? So I think news and where we get our information is part of it. I think part of it is, where did the Democratic Party fall short? Where did it go wrong? And there's lots of great analyses of that, but kind of, you know, demobilizing its base is how some scholars are talking about what happened, right? Like they gave up on their historic base, and I think that's part of it. And I also think that part of what's happening in this moment is, you know, we don't talk enough about the success of the right in disenfranchising voters. So we talk a lot about how there's this swing in the voting population, but actually part of what also happened is we just lost a lot of voters because a lot of people were, right, disenfranchised from the process. So, I mean, those are just three of the many things that are happening right now that is part of, as you're saying, it's part of naming the moment. It's part of understanding how we got here. And it also gives us the goalposts. Like if we're going to think about organizing and pushing back and trying to build up a more robust democracy, it's trying to tackle these places where the democracy is falling apart. And by the way, it's a lot of the places where those in positions of power often try to silence in order to maintain power. Places like media, places like alternative voices, places like educational institutions. And those are precisely the things that we need to refuse to give up in this moment.
Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Our guest, Dr. Kevin Kumashiro, just always helping us understand where we are. Johnny, I know we're coming up on a break. You got to have a couple thoughts, though, before we go to that break and come in.
Oh, wow, Tim. Well, like you said, I'm soaking it up, and I like us collectively coming together. Mm-hmm. Right, in spaces we can to name the moment like we are, but to also, you know, have an admission that, you know, this is an erosion of a kind of democracy, and this is a moment where we ask ourselves what are some of those core values of democratic citizenship, and how do they transcend even political party lines for us to be better and stronger communities. And so it's a gift to have Dr. Kevin Kumashiro here with us tonight. We've got more. Stay with us on The Conversation. I won't believe the lies that hide the truth. I won't sweat one more drop for you.
A new choice, Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In the first week of the new session of the Wisconsin State Legislature, Republicans fast-tracked a measure that would put a question on the ballot in the upcoming spring election that would enshrine voter ID in the state constitution. Two things on this. First, it is telling that Republicans made this their very first order of business. Senate Democratic leader Dianne Hesselbein responded to this, saying it's not cost of living or health care or gun violence that Republicans wanted to focus on, but a constitutional amendment. Telling, isn't it? But that leads to the second piece. Republicans are clearly doing this for politically motivated reasons. By having this on the spring election ballot, they're betting it will make it more likely that people who showed up to vote for Donald Trump in November will be heading to the polls to help elect right-wing candidate Brad Schimmel to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That election is on April 1st, so buckle up.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You know you love us. It's the music, we know. Can't be Tim and Johnny's pretty faces. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Our guest, Dr. Kevin Kumashiro, in the house, helping us do what he does really great, naming this moment, making sense of it. Yeah, we're talking about the reality that 3 weeks now, it's President-elect Trump and what is about to come. Johnny, I cut you off the last segment. I'm wondering if you wanted to kind of pick up here and kind of bring in, because I know you were really excited during the break. So,
I mean, this is just a great conversation, Tim, and you didn't cut me off. I think it's always a privilege to be amongst folks who are naming the moment and doing so. You know, Kevin shared with us and the listeners, right? He said, you know, there are many stories. There's not one single story, and there's a danger in that, having one story. But when we think about this moment, just highlighting some of that first segment, we talked about that this is a moment that is a culmination of right-wing organizing. It's not an accident. It's not by happenstance. It's not one to be confused much by, although we're, you know, upset by it. But it's a learning moment, right? It's a culmination of right-wing organizing. You know, I think there's also a story of there's a deep fear of youth in this country. There's a deep fear of youth. And with that change, we've always talked about, also all of us as educators, especially social studies educators, know that part of the lifeline of democracy is intergenerational energy. You know, and we tend to be a country that doesn't like its youth, right? That fears future generations and that actively does harm towards future generations. And so it's a reminder too that part of that right wing organizing is championing a fear of youth. And then with that, I have to say it, you know, as one of those stories, and we don't have to dwell on it, but reminding us all as social justice educators, and I'm preaching to the choir here in this group, but also to many of our listeners, that we are still very much a country that has deeply rooted and entrenched racism and sexism. And just flat out bigotry. And what I mean by deeply rooted is it may have become, I don't mean the extreme cases, although those have become more common given the Trump administration's political rhetoric and actions. They're very real. But what I mean by the surprise we have, Tim, when we said this is 50%, these are our neighbors, is that deeply rooted mean that there's a lot of work we have to do to unlearn racism and sexism. To see through the way that democracy isn't about getting one group's way, but it's living together and finding a balance and finding a peace together and the strength of that democracy. And we know that there's a lot of work to do there, but we're also reminded that that deeply rooted racism and sexism exists. And some of it bubbles up in ugly ways. And we can kind of look at that and say, well, that's really obviously some racism. But I think in this election with the numbers, one of the things we learn is that it's the deeply rooted kinds of assumptions where folks will say, well, this is just about economics. Sorry, it's not, you know?
And I think, thank you, Johnny. And you're reminding me, like over break, your listeners weren't able to hear, but we were having a bit of a conversation and Johnny was pointing out, you know, some interesting contradictions between the presidential votes and the down ballot for many people, right? A lot of people were supporting pretty progressive causes all over the country, including in red states, including by Trump voters, right? More progressive other candidates, ballot initiatives, and so on. And so I think, you know, again, going back to refusing simple stories, you know, one of the simple stories that including the Democrats are quick to put out there is, and they tend to put out there quite frequently, is, oh, we tended to go too far to the left. But a lot of people want to go to the left. I think, as Johnny's pointing out, this is why there's a lot of fear of younger generations, because they often herald change and new ideas and often more progressive ideas. And when the Democratic Party fails to put out a progressive, bold vision that resonates with our values, what then do we vote based on? Well, we often vote based on fear. We go the opposite way rather than a really compelling, hopeful vision. And I think that's what the Trump campaign and many of the right-wing organizers really capitalized on. And going back to, like, kind of, kind of the boogeyman kind of argument, you know, it reminds me of in 2020 and 2021 and 2022, as you saw this increasing wave of censorship bills and don't say gay bills and don't teach about critical race theory or anything that might make us uncomfortable kind of bills. You know, a lot of what was happening was not really illuminating what's happening in schools, but creating this boogeyman and a straw man. It's like creating both something that we should be afraid of, but also like this caricature that is way too easy to kind of beat down. And I think that's what we were seeing with this kind of made up story of what's actually happening in schools regarding teaching about race or teaching about democracy or teaching about anything gay for that matter, rather than actually, and I think where the left sometimes falls short is rather than doubling down and saying, let's actually see what's happening in schools. Let's insist that this is the role of schools. We try to take we tiptoe around the issue and say, oh, but no, you're right. We shouldn't make people uncomfortable. And I think, again, it goes back to don't allow kind of framings of the, don't allow narratives that use fear at the heart of their kind of thrust to be what drives our conversations. Like, we actually have to put forward a much more hopeful and bold vision. And as this election showed us, it's a vision that's actually based on very progressive values, including, by the way, just as one poll that I saw, including among younger white men that we saw was one of the big shifts that is growing for the Trump population. This population also is majority supporting some pretty progressive causes when it comes to policy issues. So we need to embrace that change, and we need to be sort of out in front putting forward the vision.
It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. It's educated educators talking education. Our mailbag number, 608-557-8577. Yeah, you can give us a call. Let us know what you think. You know, send Kevin Kumashiro, Dr. Kumashiro, some love. We'll make sure that he gets it, 608-557-8577. Kevin, talking about that too, that the embracing of the progressive left values, as you said, you know, kind of putting this out there, but then putting it to education, as you say, instead of defending, right? I mean, here we, and I think we probably even did a few shows where we were defending against the attack on teaching history, teaching critical race theory. And maybe you just made me even think about that as saying, you know, it needed a defense for absolute sure, because the attack was horrendous and totally lopsided in a way that didn't make sense. But the other part of that too was putting forward the why critical race theory is good teaching, why diversity, equity, and inclusion matter so strongly in a democracy. As you're saying, Kevin, we're framing that as a push forward that actually enlightens people in a way that they feel inspired to be a part of it, as opposed to being fearful of it, because now it becomes a story of inclusion, that you are included. Yes, you younger white men that voted, you're part of this story. You get to be a part of this story. And that failure, yeah. Oh, man. Our friend, Dr. Kevin Kumashiro, Busting Pencils with us. We will be right back.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
CBS News Brief. TikTok is likely to get a reprieve from that ban set to take effect tomorrow. President-elect Donald Trump tells NBC News that he's considering an extension. CBS tech contributor Ian Scher.
It's worth noting that TikTok's CEO will be attending Trump's inauguration and that there have been a lot of people who've pushed back against Trump.
Trump's inauguration will be inside now thanks to dangerously cold temperatures hitting the nation. CBS meteorologist John Elliott.
Widespread computer guidance saying 6 to 12 inches for some of the biggest cities along the East Coast. And it's very cold after the snow.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is warning that the ceasefire deal won't go forward unless his nation gets the names of the hostages set to be released. This in a national address hours before that whole thing is supposed to begin. CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Remembering Bob Uecker. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The voice of the Brewers, Bob Uecker, passed away Thursday at the age of 90. Former Brewers owner and baseball commissioner Bud Selig.
Bob and I first met about 1959. You know, that's 65 years. Bob and I used to kid a lot. We were two Milwaukee kids. When I hired him, January of 1971, I said, how'd you like to work for the Brewers? He said, I'd love to. That was it. We never had a contract, never had any broadcast games, and he's done the same with Mark Antanasio. And he was just remarkable. Loyal to Milwaukee and Wisconsin. Talk about things, and he had an unbelievable mind. But he did love the game. I mean, he means so much to Brewer fans and baseball fans. He was one of them, and they knew it.
That's Bud Selig with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A mix of sun and clouds and a high in the mid-20s today, wind chills down to zero. Partly cloudy tonight, a low near 2, wind chill to 10 degrees below. Mostly sunny and near 5 Sunday, wind chill to 15 below. Right now it's 22.
Hey, it's family time at Chula Vista with the right kind of fun for everyone. Wisconsin's most complete resort experience has everything you want. Fine-tuned for 70 years by four generations of the Kaminsky family. Chula Vista can be easygoing with colorful scenic river walks, a rejuvenating spa visit, relaxing at outdoor fire pits, or you can go all out in 80,000 square feet of indoor water park and outdoors with cross-country skiing, sledding, and snowshoeing. Dining comes any way you like it, from pizza to Wisconsin's number one ranked steakhouse. More than 600 guest rooms to choose from with $10 million in updates. Chula Vista, everything you've been wanting, all right here, on site. Check it out at ChulaVistaResort.com.
Discover Chula's Winter Wonderland. Miles of freshly groomed trails, skiing, sledding, snowshoeing. Check out bonus gift cards at ChulaVistaResort.com.
How was your drive to school?
Let me tell you, I had to get my iced coffee first. I just can't seem to put it down. My favorite rapper just announced a tour. My phone was buzzing like crazy. I'm so excited. I had to text all my friends right then to talk about it. Then someone started calling me and...
Let's try that again.
I turned my phone off right away. I never drive distracted.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time as we will cover the inauguration in Washington, D.C. and also talk about who the next civil rights leader might be for Martin Luther King Day. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
responsibility.
Yes, you do. What we all want. We need it more than ever. Busted Pencils, fully led in education talk. Educated educators talking education. We take on our responsibility really seriously here. Loving it. Our guest, Dr. Kevin Kumashiro, helping us name the moment, helping us try to make sense. And the other part is to be, you know, trying to figure out, we started making a little bit of a pivot about saying, you know, that there is something hopeful that we can actually frame this as. But there have been some interesting things, though, Kevin, along the way over the past couple of weeks, where we're like, what, really? Can it get, you know, we knew Project 2025. We knew it was coming. We knew what was in there. We heard it. But Jess, we got that ready? Okay, so we're just going to play a little clip for you, Kevin, and then we're just going to kind of riff off it when we're done with it and make some sense of it. Jess, let's hear what these people are talking about.
Administration, Betsy DeVos. Betsy, welcome back to the program. Good to have you here. What's your reaction to the appointment of Linda McMahon in this post at Education?
Well, I think it's a great appointment. Linda is a proven executive that has a ton of experience. She did a great job at SBA. She has a heart for kids and education. And we all know that the Department of Education is a mess. It has failed in its mission, and she will do a great job in implementing the policies that President Trump has championed, starting with education freedom, tax credit policy around school choice, and cleaning up and clarifying Title IX and this issue of men in women's bathrooms in women's sports, cleaning up the mess that federal student aid is and the FAFSA, the whole FAFSA rollout debacle. And then importantly, returning to the states and local communities power over decision making and resources to do the best thing for kids at the most local level.
Okay, just enough. So, wow. It's the cabinet season, as Johnny and I just released today, the president's cabinetry. We're not talking about those cabinets that you put your soup and your bowls away in the kitchen, but he's picking cabinets, man. He's laying them out there. And, I got to say, I called this one wrong. Anybody who listened to the one that dropped on Wednesday, I said, without a doubt, before the end of the week, we would have a Secretary of Education named. That part I was right on. Mm-hmm. I picked the wrong person, though. I went with Ryan Walters, the state superintendent from Oklahoma.
I mean, he auditioned really hard for it.
He was working it, man. I mean, I was cheering him on. I wanted it. But Kevin, come on. Betsy DeVos now giving us the enlightenment that is going to be Linda McMahon. I got to get a little bit of Kevin Kumashiro thinking about this.
Wow. Yeah. I saw the announcement yesterday and I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. And I think I would say several things. Like, one is, I think, what we can expect is that Trump will surround himself by a cabinet that really wants to, that it's like the cheerleaders of Trump, not visionary leaders, and certainly not experts, not people with, who are going to kind of advance democracy in their field. And Linda McMahon, of course, is the co-chair of his transition team and, a huge cheerleader of Trump. I think regardless of who's in that role, though, this is kind of my thinking. Like, I mean, he could have picked, he could have picked other people, Moms for Liberty leaders or Chris Rufo. Like, there are other people he could have picked, right? Like, the person you pointed out, the Oklahoma State Superintendent. I think whoever is in that role, whether it's this person, if she gets confirmed, or whoever might follow her, I think ultimately their job is to implement a game plan that has already been laid out. And it's one that's hugely about privatization. It's one that's about using culture wars as a way to kind of leverage public opinion to push forward on kind of far right agendas. It's about dismantling the federal level. And it's also about kind of really centering education on a Christian dominionist or Christian nationalist kind of ideology. One thing that I think there's a lot of talk about is, can Trump dismantle the Department of Ed? I've heard a lot of people talk about that. But here's the way I think about this. Like, okay, so he's not going to be able to do it by himself instantly.
Right.
And he'd probably get a lot of pushback. But what that to me, the larger question is, what does that symbolize? What's underneath the call to dismantle the Department of Ed? What's underneath the call to defund this and privatize this and blah, blah, blah? I think what I go back to is the call to dismantle the public, the federal Department of Ed began immediately after its formation, right? So 79, right. You see the formation of a federal Department of Education that brought together really what was work happening on education in at least four major ways in other agencies in the decades preceding. And so Reagan gets elected. By the way, 1980 is when we saw the first, as you probably know, the predecessor of Project 2025, the first so-called mandate for leadership. Project 2025 is simply the ninth version of this. And it was the right wing basically saying to this incoming conservative president, Reagan, hey, here's what we think you should be doing. And one of the things that that the Republican Party has long been calling for is dismantling the Department of Ed. But why dismantle it? Well, it's because in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, at the federal level, you saw through litigation, like court decisions, but also through legislation, like through Congress, you saw the federal government push forward on sort of pushing states and locals to adhere to civil rights non-discrimination law. This is called the federal era in education, the like mid-1950s to the late 1970s, where the federal government, through a whole bunch of legislation and court decisions, is doing this. It's kind of saying we need to adhere to civil rights non-discrimination law, and we're going to tie federal funding to compliance in that regard. And you know, with Elementary Secondary Education Act, Civil Rights Act, Brown versus Board of Education, Lau versus Nichols. I mean, the list goes on and on about what was happening. And that's really where you see the thrust against federal intervention in education. I think that's why there's such a move to not just defund at the federal level, or at least push the funding to state to be able to use at their discretion, but to get rid of the arm of the federal government that can actually push forward on this vision, which would be the Department of Ed. And it's not coincidental that the right so largely was cheering the Supreme Court case earlier this year. Let me just look it up. Loper Bright Enterprises versus Raimondo. So this is the Supreme Court case that overturns the so-called Chevron doctrine, right? This 40-year doctrine at the federal level that basically said where Congress is ambiguous, the agency has the ability to kind of step in and define, right? And the courts basically said, no, the agencies don't have a way, shouldn't be able to do that. And again, this is going to this fear by many on the right that the federal government has long used agencies, whether it's, you know, Health and Human Services or, you know, Interior, or in this case, education, to push forward on visions that they're sort of diametrically opposed to. So I think that when we look at Project 2025, one of the things we want to kind of think about is, what is the history that it's responding to? Right? What is it that it's trying to push back on? And just as the federal government has played this role, there are other major kind of thrusts over the last few decades that Project 2025 is trying to push back on. One of it being, any kind of what we might nowadays call DEI or multicultural initiatives that are really about trying to explicitly address issues of diversity and inequity, particularly by race, but in other dimensions as well. You see efforts to equalize, or at least to make more equitable, I should say, funding. And that's the big, big thrust of federal legislation, is to try to address funding inequities, because funding is so often at the heart of other sorts of problems. And so it's not surprising then that you not only have the thrust to move funding to the state level, you also have the thrust to increasingly privatize education. And then, of course, you know, I would say that increasingly the role of Christian nationalism has really become just so front and center, intertwined with white nationalism, with far-right conservatism, and with neoliberalism. Conservatism as well. Like, they're all so intertwined. And what, again, if you were to go back to your opening question, Tim, about like what is our task in naming the moment, I think our task is to connect all of these dots. They're not disparate initiatives. Mm-hmm. They're actually
fundamentally connected, and our inability to connect the dots means that we come up with solutions that aren't actually going to be very transformative, right? We need to see how the problems are intersected and come up with solutions that are similarly intersectional.
Johnny Lupinacci, man, I could see you. Oh my God, Kevin, just keep talking.
I love that. And I want to echo it and repeat it, to see the interconnected issues, mm-hmm. right? And to match those with interconnected responses, mm. right? And to really understand the complex ways these things come together, you know, and to respond with that same complexity, right? To really say, okay, let's not just pick one of these issues. Let's not simplify it, but see how they're all interrelated. Right. And then respond in such ways to where those interrelated, we can call them problems or, you know, threats, but they're more than threats. They're real attacks on diversity. Right. And when I say that, I mean democracy too, right? Like they're, mm-hmm. they're threatening the well-being and the health and the growth of a democracy. And they're doing that in interconnected ways. And so our response being interconnected when we're thinking largely about the role of public education. And so, I mean, that's a really, I think, also highlight of naming the moment, recognizing the interconnected ways that democracy is being hurt, right? Is being threatened for future growth. We might even call it democracy on the ropes or democracy back in the ICU. We can come up with all kinds of metaphors for it, right? But, or a forest raised. But we want to really think about then interconnected responses. So I love that invitation to collectively thinking of interrelated, interconnected responses that ensure future health for our democracy. So Dr. Kumashiro, thank you for that reminder of things. And Tim, you did predict an incorrect prediction on the Secretary of Education. But I kind of told you, remember, I said, don't hold your breath.
I know.
And I think when we talk about the culmination of right-wing organizing, and Kevin named it, you know, you have neoconservatism, we have Christian nationalism, we have neoliberalism, which really utilizes neoconservatism and Christian nationalism to deregulate and increase markets. And so, Tim, it's well played by right-wing organizing to give something to the Christian nationalists who supported this election and say, here's somebody who champions what you believe public schools should be. And then do the classic neoliberal move of saying, now here is, you know, my wrestling buddy.
here's this person I saw on TV.
and that I work with. So there's a form of sort of cronyism that goes into this as well that is in every way part of like a neoliberal push. I know we talk about that term here on Busted Pencils and in education especially, but really, you know, to simplify it a bit, the strengthening of government for the purpose of deregulating it. You know, it's almost this tricky way of like, wait a minute, most classical liberal theorists, like people who are true libertarian kind of ideas or classic liberalism, they despise federal governments. Right. They do not like the power of a government to tell us what to do. But neoliberals have figured out this really insidious and really successful way of saying, but what if we utilize government to take away its power and to regulate, really deregulate, but have a say in how we can make more money for the elite. And so this is part of that. I kind of said, Tim, brace yourself because there's going to be a lot of change. And speaking to that change, we got to talk about it and name that moment. What do we do in response to big moments of change, right? And we had great guests, Dr. Kevin Kumashiro. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for busting pencils with us.
Such a treat to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Dr. Kevin Kumashiro. And Kevin, real quick, there's a cool conference coming up. Date, time, give us it.
Oh my gosh, December 6th and 7th. Thanks so much. This is the International Conference on Education and Justice, my 14th conference that I've organized in Honolulu, Hawaii. If you go to my website, kevinkumashiro.com, you can see all the info. I hope to see a lot of Busted Pencil listeners at the conference.
We'll be breaking it down when we get back.
Responsibility, what's that? I don't want to think about it. We'd be better off without it. I don't want to think about it. Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
Hey there. It's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. My savings tip for today is about meal planning. I know you've heard of it, but let's talk about it. Meal planning will save you money, it reduces impulse purchases, it helps you not waste food, and it may be the very best thing you can do to cut back on your weekly spending. It also helps cut back the number of arguments we have in my house about what's for dinner. A writer of a recent Reader's Digest article said that she saved herself $500 a month on meal planning. I mean, we all eat differently, but those are some real savings. I know, meal planning can be a pain. So I reward myself with a treat while I plan. A beer, some ice cream, maybe a recipe magazine. And in my house, the planner does not have to be the shopper. That's real motivation. For more everyday money tips, check out workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Couldn't be more appropriate. Oh, loving that. Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. It seems so appropriate. A little seven dust right there coming in after such an awesome conversation with Dr. Kevin Kumashiro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, Jess, I told you would really like him.
Oh, Kevin's a good dude. I can't wait to have him back.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, if you like Kevin too, we want to hear about it. We want to hear all of your comments. That's why we have the Busted Pencils mailbag. You can give us a call, text us, leave a voicemail, 608-557-8577. 608-557-8577 is the Busted Pencils mailbag. Love to hear from all of you out there. Because you know what, too? We like to bring what you guys are telling us to the show all the time. But Johnny, naming this moment, Linda McMahon, Kevin Kumashiro, all this stuff, dude. How does Johnny Lupinacci name this moment?
Well, I mean, I was kind of highlighting and capturing, you know, some of the phrases that Kevin was giving us that are, I think, so guiding, right?
Right.
That they're real beacons from what we were talking here today. And I like that he, you know, reminds us to not accept a single story, to not fall into that, I think, bad habit of finding or hoping that there's a single story or a single solution to a very complex culmination of successful right-wing organizing. I like that language he put to that. Kevin does that, right?
I know, right?
He puts such concise language to a moment and to some of, like, to the political dissonance of K-12 education, of higher education, and helps us to focus on how do we be democratic citizens in action. How do we be educated educators, not just talking education, but working together towards educational change? And so I think that's a way of naming the moment. I also really love identifying that these are interrelated.
Yeah.
I think attacks, but they're more than attacks. They've been successful ways of knocking down democracy. I called it democracy on the ropes, democracy in ICU, or we can think about that the ways that we're really chipping away, and I say we, you know, we have to share, even if they're not our political views or dreams, that the direction that this country has chosen to go, and I emphasize there was a choice there.
Yeah, there was.
It wasn't all of our choice, but it's, you know, a majority rule system. The majority of this nation is choosing to erode democracy, and that's dangerous, but it's not simple. Mm-hmm. There are interrelated ways that that's happening successfully. And thus reminding us that we need interrelated responses. Mm-hmm. We need interconnected responses. And so as we continue to talk about K-12 education and higher education and the politics of that, right, both the political, the economic, right, and the very material ways that those decisions impact learning in our country and thus the future strength of this democracy, that I think it's helpful have these kinds of conversations, these special shows, these powerful guests who help us to really decipher the sometimes cryptic moves that are happening.
Yeah, think about the one, too, to point that out, as you say, interconnected different stories. You know, we made a choice. And some of those choices, and I really want to highlight this one, too, because it points out, though, what we've been saying on Busted Pencils for years here, though, too, is that you want to talk about something that actually provides a lot of agreement. Talk about your public schools, because on this issue particularly, and this is where Democrats just don't get it, is to how to loop in a strong public schools bedrock foundation of democracy, anchors in the community, and pointing that out and realizing how that's a winning issue. How do we know that, Johnny? Because in those states, in those counties where our neighbors chose President Trump as the future president, when it came to making a decision on vouchers, in other words, giving their tax dollars to others to send kids to private schools, thereby then defunding their private schools, vouchers lost everywhere. One example, too, and we're going to be having a great guest coming up for one of our classes in session, but Kentucky beat down vouchers across the state. The state went significantly to President Trump, but the population voted down vouchers. In other words, what they voted for was they voted for their public schools. So think about that, Johnny. How do we make sense of a moment where our neighbors said, we're going to choose President Trump, but we're going to also make a choice for our local public schools? How do we help people make sense of that moment?
Yeah, I mean, if you're asking me, I mean, we could do a whole show on it, right? And it's called Being Bamboozled. Right? And I'm not going to actually blame the victim here.
No.
And I know we can say you made a choice and now you have to sit and live with your choice. And we all do, actually. But there's a way that I believe a lot of voters were bamboozled on issues that are truly important to them. But I'm going to come back to it. And Kevin brought it up. We don't emphasize the interrelated things, the interrelated nature of these issues like vouchers and voting for Trump, right? Being against vouchers and voting for Trump, or being not racist and voting for Trump. These are really important things. We tend to separate them out and focus on a single issue. And that's just part of the problem.
Man, so much going on. What a great show. You know what, though? Makes me wonder. What do we got for our moment of zen? If history is to be creative, to anticipate a possible future without denying the past, it should, I believe, emphasize new possibilities by disclosing those hidden episodes of the past when, even if in brief flashes, people showed their ability to resist, to join together, and occasionally to win.
All right, don't forget to listen to Monday's Homeroom and Wednesday's Class in Session with David Pepper. Catch Friday's First Down and Friday Night Lights. And as always, folks, tune in at 3 p.m. on Saturdays to listen to Busted Pencils on all the live civic media networks.
And keep busting pencils.
A new choice, Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK. Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday morning, the return of Dr. Kristen Lierley from some faraway island. And a president gets inaugurated too, I guess.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
I'm Dr. Jasmine Zapata, Chief Medical Officer for Community Health at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Every year in the U.S., about 21,000 lung cancer deaths are caused by radon, an odorless, tasteless, and colorless gas. One in 10 Wisconsin homes has high levels of radon. Does yours? Call 1-888-LOW-RADON or visit lowradon.org to learn more. Test. Fix. Save a life.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keys. President-elect Donald Trump is signaling a boon for TikTok, telling NBC News that he will most likely give the popular video app a 90-day extension to keep the ban set for tomorrow from taking effect. CBS News tech contributor Ian Scher.
If Trump offers that reprieve, will TikTok remain online? Will it go offline for 12 or 24 hours? It's really unclear.
Most of the nation is bundling up against dangerously frigid temperatures headed for many states. Meteorologist Craig Allen explains.
Absolutely some of the coldest air we have seen in years across portions of the United States. It may be over a decade since we've seen this kind of cold air make its way straight down from Canada all the way down to the Gulf Coast.
That weather is forcing the president-elect to move his second inauguration indoors